Welcome to Dirty Little Podcast, short story romance for those with an audible fixation. Listener discretion is advised, but please feel free to operate some heavy machinery. Since we're taking the week off, we decided to rerun one of our earlier favorites with zero interruptions, just for the holiday week. And since we're all doing some shopping today, a wild encounter at a grocery store brings back a memory of a wild youth. Checkout Line, written by Maggie Bowen and narrated by Joshua McCrae. "I don't need a housekeeper, John," she would say. "Of course you don't. What you need is more time and less stuff to do. When was the last time you read a book or took a walk without your Fitbit?" "Tuesday." "Liar. You work too hard. It's time to cut yourself a little slack and schedule some goof-off time. See a movie, grab a handful of quarters, and go to a video arcade." "Get a pedicure?" "Whatever, as long as it's not productive." Replaying that scene in her head, she realized she had grown fond of the housekeeper and the several extra hours she had all to herself each week. Plus, the house had a certain sparkle to it when she returned, as if cleaned with a magic wand instead of a yellow sponge. She still wasn't quite comfortable with a stranger washing and folding her underwear, but she tried not to think about that in any detail. And her husband was right. She did need to slow down and smell the flowers. It wasn't that she was uptight. She'd been a champion of cutting loose up into her last year of college. But it felt good to be motivated, to check things off her list, to know precisely where the soccer shoes were hiding and how many slices of bread were left in the fridge. She had seen the staggering number of red notifications on her friends' cell phones and recoiled with horror. How could they possibly live like that? Anyway, she had the next few hours all to herself. Now, if her hair would just cooperate. Ponytail, it was the only way. She pulled her hair back just tight enough that it wouldn't give her a headache later on in the day, and let a few lightly curled strands dangle down her cheek. She caught a glimpse of herself in the mirror. To her delight, the ponytail gave her a youthfulness that she hadn't seen in her face for a long time. Maybe the hair pulled back ironed out a few of the wrinkles. Maybe it was just perkiness or that little extra bounce. Maybe it had just been so long since she had worn her hair like this, and the image was just a ghost of her former self. Either way, she smiled at her reflection, something else she hadn't done in a long time. She did the final check of her home, turning off lights and the fan above the stove, making sure the lock to the sliding glass door was latched. Her husband liked to sneak a few cigarettes out back when he thought she had gone to bed, and he always left the back door unlocked. Drove her crazy. One final cursory glance around the place, and she decided the home was clean enough for the maid to come over. Fires had been burning all over Northern California this year, and she could smell the ash and soot in the air as soon as she stepped outside. It was early yet, but the temperature was like standing next to an open stove. She ran to the door of her SUV and jumped inside. There was not much to like about the car John had picked out for her, but the AC sure got cold quickly. It was her own fault, the car. How many times had she complained to John about never being able to see above the traffic, about never having enough room on road trips? So he had surprised her with this massive hunk of metal. It was beautiful, but it was a beast. And John, bless him, got taken to the cleaners for every shiny new gadget available on the options list. Leather dashboard, heated seats which stuck to her thighs, a top-of-the-line stereo which only ever really played NPR, and a satellite navigation system which required a degree in computer science and two forms of ID. The rumble of the engine was exciting at first. Who doesn't like a good beefy, throaty rumble? But it would set off car alarms, and the neighbors were always aware of her coming and going. The AC, though, it was like an industrial blast chiller. It smelled as clean and refreshing as a dentist office. Maybe John had sprung for the nitrous oxide option. She missed driving something more nimble. The suburban streets she lived in were wide as they could possibly be, but every turn was a three-point turn, even backing out of her driveway. Once on the road, the car accelerated like a tank and required half a mile to slow down. Fine for highway speeds, but running errands around town could be a chore. And nothing was more inhospitable to an oversized SUV than a Trader Joe's parking lot. The spaces were narrow and short. The lanes only went in one way, and if you were careful, there was just enough space for a Mazda Miata and a single shopping cart to pass one another. It would be her last stop. She'd probably park around the corner and walk, even in this heat. As she assumed, her office trip didn't need to be made. Her email inbox was empty, and there weren't any pending tasks. She went next to the post office for stamps. She got the boring ones with the flags. She used to be the kind of person who got the cute ones, but when the boys were young, they went through an entire roll thinking they were stickers. The kids were older now, but the habit of getting the boring ones sort of stuck around. The temperature gauge on her dashboard said 104, but the lot in front of TJ's looked like a line at Disneyland, so she decided to brace herself for the heat and smoke and parked in the adjacent street. She gathered her reusable bags before shutting off the engine. It wasn't because she was environmentally conscious. The SUV could have given that away. But she hated the look of mild disappointment on the clerk's face when she said she needed to purchase a bag. A look that said, "It's been almost 5 years, ma'am. When are you going to get your life together?" The heat wasn't as jarring as she anticipated. The smoke was awful, but the air wasn't humid. She would be sticking to the seats on her return run home. Her ponytail bounced with a certain perkiness as she walked briskly to the store. The automatic doors opened with a spaceship-like whoosh, and she made a balletic leap into the cold air. This wasn't going to be a big shop. She needed to pick up a few bottles of wine, some salad dressing, some pita chips, and a certain brand of hummus that she absolutely hated, but John loved, even though it made him stink something awful when he finally came to bed. She honestly preferred the smell of cigarettes to roasted pepper hummus, but it was one of his favorite things, and she loved him. The store was crowded, but she was able to move briskly through the aisles, darting between the slower shoppers who seemed confused by the variety of different olive oils. She wondered what it would be like to have the urge to just browse. She grabbed veggies and assorted snacks, was wooed by a box of bite-sized cheesecakes, and then made her way to the wine section. Picking out wines was always a chore. There were the expensive ones, of course, but it always felt weird to her to spend serious money on something that wouldn't last through a cheese course and wouldn't be commented on whether it cost $5 or $50. She decided on two red blends, both under $6, and splurged on an $8 Chardonnay that she knew she really liked. One that made her tipsy after two glasses. The checkout lines were long, but they seemed to move quickly. She eyed the other customers and chose a line with more people in it, but they were all carrying baskets instead of pushing carts, and none of them looked as though they would strike up a conversation with the cashier and slow everything to a halt. She took a breath and let her mind wander. There was a smell in the air that struck her sharply. It wasn't the smell of the wildfires or the scent of bodies smashed together waiting their turn. It was musky and sweet, and it practically sent her back in time. Europe, post-graduation. She and her travel mates had been a little wild and a little reckless, but it was a safer time. Three young women could expect to hike the countryside in relative peace. A bedroll, a blanket, a single change of clothes, and a jug of homemade wine purchased at a random farm. It was the stars she couldn't get enough of. Growing up in suburbia, always seeing the midnight sky through the glare of streetlights, she had never experienced the depth of what the universe really looked like unfiltered. It was why she had decided to stay one more night while her friends took the late afternoon train to Tuscany. She wanted one more night under that brilliant canopy all by herself, without the rambling of her friends. When she woke, she found herself on a hill of grass beside a beautiful vineyard that stretched out as far as her eye could see. There was what looked like a chateau at the top of one of the hills, and she decided that would be as good a place as any to seek out breakfast. She shoved her blanket and her bedroll into her backpack and decided last minute to leave the empty clay jug where it was. She imagined it being discovered 1,000 years from now, an archaeologist testing the varietal of wine, maybe even the DNA of her lip on the rim. It made her smile. As she walked toward the chateau, a cool mist floated over the vineyard, sweeping in like a protective blanket from the morning sun. She stayed on the gravel road, but there were times when she lost sight of the building and had to trust that the path was going in the right direction. When the fog lifted, she was closer than she thought, and the chateau was much grander than she had expected. It was the size of a mansion, but had a cozy, handmade look to it. 3 stories high, windows in every room that looked like slightly crooked teeth, as if engineered centuries ago and had been settling ever since. The only thing opulent about it was the massive front doors and the immaculately tended driveway that led up to them. She felt odd knocking, but what else was she going to do? She expected to be received by a somber butler or a harried servant, but as the door opened, it revealed a man, his features soft, his hair tousled as if he had just woken. He wore a pair of blue jeans, clean but relaxed, and a French-cut shirt, the cuffs of the sleeves unbuttoned. His eyes, the bluest she had ever seen. He was older, but not necessarily old, as if the transition between boy and manhood had been recent. She was instantly taken with him. He had an expectant look on his face, as anyone might when opening the door to a stranger, but as his eyes met hers, he cocked his head and smiled. Then, as if there was a gala going on behind him and she was the guest of honor who had been running a little late, he opened his mouth. "Well, hello there," he said. Zoe didn't know what she expected, but it certainly wasn't this. A casual greeting from an attractive older man in a place this opulent. She said hello and was about to introduce herself when he held up a finger and pulled the door open wide to reveal a grand entryway with a double staircase. "Come on in," he said, his accent purely American. Zoe fixed her backpack more squarely on her shoulder and entered the chateau. The place was immense and richly decorated, but not gilded the way a palace might be. It was comfortable instead of crass, as if the person who built the interior was more interested in pleasing themselves than displaying their wealth for others. It smelled sweet, sour, and musty, the way a wine cellar smells, which made sense. The place was clean and the wood surfaces shiny, but as Zoe looked around, there were several pieces of furniture covered in white canvas. "Can I take this?" he said. Zoe felt his hands lifting her backpack from her shoulder, and she shivered at the touch. She spun, holding her pack more tightly. "No, I got it," she said. "Understood," he said. "You just let me know when it gets too heavy, and I'll bring it up to your room." "My room?" "I wasn't expecting your family for another few days, but all the rooms have been prepped and the kitchen is stocked. Just say the word and I'll have a fire going."
"I'm not..."
"You're not?"
"I'm not family. I'm just backpacking through and I saw this house and thought it might be a good place to ask for directions and maybe get a ride to the nearest train station."
"Oh, I'm sorry for not being more formal. I thought you were..." "Well, never mind. What's your name?"
"Zelda, but I got sick of the jokes, so everybody calls me Zoe."
"I'm Cooper," he said, and reached out his hand. Zoe took it. His handshake was warm and firm, but his skin was remarkably soft. Whatever this man did for a living, it wasn't farm work. He looked at her for a moment. His face still had the air of familiarity, as if they'd known each other for a long time. And then it turned quizzical.
"What?"
she asked. "I was just trying to think of what kind of jokes children can make out of Zelda Fitzgerald."
"Oh, no. The Zelda from the video game. Who is Zelda Fitzgerald?"
"The wife of F. Scott Fitzgerald, the writer of The Great Gatsby. They went broke, she went crazy, and spent the rest of her life in an asylum. Really sad, and not the sort of topic for the playground."
"No, Zelda's a character from a video game. Always needing to be rescued? Really irritating."
"Got it. I'm a little out of touch. What can I do for you, Zoe?" She explained to him her situation, the wanderlust, the beauty of the unmolested night sky, the fact that she didn't know exactly where she was or how to get to where she wanted to be. She was rambling, but he seemed perfectly engrossed in her story,
and she concluded with her waking up this morning and seeing the chateau in the distance. "I'll bet you're hungry," he said. "Famished." "Well, as I said, the kitchen is fully stocked, so if you're comfortable following an old man through an empty chateau in the middle of nowhere, how about I lead you to where the food is and cook us up some breakfast?" Zoe wasn't bereft of imagination. Odd as the situation might be, attractive and charming as he seemed, there was certainly a very real danger in getting too comfortable or letting her guard down. But she was intuitive, and none of her usual alarm bells were going off. In fact, if anything were to happen, she felt pretty confident it would be her seducing him and not the other way around. The thought made her feel bashful for a moment. "I don't think you're old," she said. "Well, I'm 36, which has got to be close to twice your age." "I'm 24, she said defensively. He laughed. "Oh yeah, that's ancient." He closed the door behind her and began walking down the hall, gesturing for her to follow with a nod of his head. She noticed that he hadn't bothered to engage the large set of deadbolts on the door and wondered if that was for her benefit, to make sure she didn't feel trapped, or if it was because they were in the middle of nowhere and why bother. It still felt like it was a conscious effort to make her feel safe. They wound their way through the estate, Cooper acting as a sort of tour guide, pointing out the library, the music room, the office where he spent most of his time writing. "You're a writer?" she asked. "That's what I tell my mom. My critics think I'm just a prolific typist."
"You have critics? So you're a famous author?"
"You could say that. I treasure my anonymity. Only my agent and my accountant know which titles I'm connected to, and as long as their paychecks get cashed on time, they don't much care who I am." He smiled as if touched by a fond memory. There was a monstrous-looking manual typewriter on the desk, surrounded by several stacks of printer paper.
"What kind of books do you write?" she asked.
"Romance. I put out about 10 books per year, most under different names. There's a formula to them that's comforting. Gives me space to envision spectacular scenarios, and honestly, there's a lot of real poetry to getting the eroticism just right. I can be inventive without too much exposition, carnal without being gruesome, and there's always a happy ending."
Zoe loved romance novels, disappearing into the sexual fantasies of others, laughing at the impossible situations, dreaming about perfectly sculpted men, sex that was never awkward or sticky. If this man was as prolific as he claimed, there was a very real chance he had already been responsible for several of her own orgasms through the years. That thought was delicious. As they walked, he explained to her that he was also a professional house sitter. He traveled the world to different places and would watch over the estates of the wealthy while they chased good weather.
"Like The Shining. You hang out in empty mansions all by yourself for months at a time."
"I get that reference, sort of. The solitude is perfect for writing, but I try to get out every few days. Too much solitude is bad for the brain."
He led her on through another hallway and pulled a large metal door open to reveal a massive industrial kitchen. He went straight to the fridge, gathering an armload of ingredients.
"Eggs or pancakes?" he asked.
"Yes, please," she said a little too flirtatiously and hopped onto a stool opposite the stove and griddle.
"Coming right up," he said.
Zoe watched while he moved about the kitchen. He was graceful in some ways and clumsy in others. She asked him about his situation. If he was such a famous author, why was he working as a caretaker? Why not buy his own chateau?
"It's because by nature, I'm lazy," he said. "Ever notice how much more responsible you are for yourself when you're in someone else's home? You use coasters, you don't put your feet on the furniture, the dishes get done right after dinner. As a perpetual guest, I'm sort of always on my best behavior."
"That sounds awful."
"Well, were this my place, you'd have found me in boxer shorts, a dirty robe, bunny slippers, and some form of unruly beard. I probably wouldn't be able to tell you the last time I had showered."
"Why not get a maid? Or a girlfriend?" she asked. He paused and looked a little dreamy.
I was married for a long time. She passed away several years ago, and up until recently I've been reluctant.
Up until recently?
Well, I'm not a monk, and life is better shared. This place, in fact, will be the last of my commitments. Next week I'll be off to New York to approve edits, and then for the first time in a long time, I'm not sure what happens next.
He put two plates on the counter, walked around the large stove, and sat down in a stool next to her. They ate in relative silence. She wasn't sure if it was the hunger or his kitchen skills, but the pancakes were the best she had ever had. She almost licked the plate to catch the final drops of syrup.
"Any more?" he asked. She shook her head and rubbed her belly.
"Okay, well, whenever you're ready. The nearest train station is about 45 minutes away by car."
He looked at his watch.
"The last train leaves about 3. If we leave in the next hour or so, we should be able to make it."
"Actually," she said.
"What?"
"It has been a really long time since I've slept in a bed, and you mentioned that the owners of this place aren't due for another week. Is it possible? And feel free to say no, but is it possible I can just stay one night? I promise I won't get in your way. I'll be quiet as a mouse."
"You don't have to be quiet. The writing's all done for now, so yeah, if you want to stay, stay."
"Great," she said. "Let me just take a quick shower to get the road dirt off my body, and then you can show me around the place."
"Okay," he said. "Up the stairs and to the left. The family has a daughter a little younger than you. Her room is more of a suite, private shower and bath. Consider it yours for the night."
"That sounds excellent," she said.
"I'll be in the library at the bottom of the stairs, so whenever you're ready, I'll take you around."
He took away their empty plates, gave them a rinse, and put them in an industrial-sized dishwasher. Then he led her back to a series of hallways until they ended up back where they started.
"Take your time," he said, as she started up the staircase.
Zoe wondered if he was watching her walk up the stairs, the imagined feel of his eyes on her backside. She didn't turn around because she didn't want to embarrass him if that was indeed what he was doing. The room he described was much bigger than she had imagined, and very, very pink. How young was this girl? She closed the door behind her, locked it, and took off all her clothes, throwing each item to a different spot on the floor just to make the place feel lived in. Naked, she crossed the room and entered the bathroom, which was also insanely pink. It took no time at all for the shower to get hot, jets blasting her from every angle. She luxuriated as the steam rose and the soap slid down her skin. She shaved all the parts that needed shaving and trimmed all the parts that needed trimming, then ran her hands down her body, almost wishing that she had not locked the door and that she had left more clues as to how much she'd like to feel his hands where hers were now. A delicious chill ran through her body. She shut off the jets and toweled herself dry with what had to be the warmest, most fluffiest towel she had ever touched. Not wanting to put her grungy clothes on her nice clean skin, she opted to see if there was a walk-in closet. There was, and it didn't disappoint. She had lived in apartments that were smaller. And just like the rest of the decor, an entire wall was devoted to pink hoodies and yoga pants. She found a nice light summer dress that was a little small in the hips and chest, but was actually pretty flattering in the full-length mirror. Not sure what to do with her hair, she pulled it up into a basic ponytail and saw in her reflection why Cooper must have thought she was barely out of high school. He was sitting on a chaise lounge, hunched over several sheets of paper scattered on the floor in front of him. She tapped lightly on the door, and he looked up at her. His expression was warm and controlled, but it was definitely the look a man gets when a woman lights up a room.
"Well, hello there," he said.
She didn't reply. Instead, she walked toward him, careful not to step on any of his papers, knelt in front of his knees, reached out, and began popping the buttons on his shirt. He looked surprised but not afraid, and was about to say something when she touched her finger to his lips and shook her head.
The last of the buttons undone, she opened the rest of his shirt and dragged her hand on his chest and torso. He was lean with taut muscles that twitched at her touch as if her fingers were cold. She unbuckled his belt, pulled down the zipper, and she could feel him wanting to say something. But she returned her finger to his lips and shook her head again. She grabbed the top of his trousers, along with the elastic edge of his briefs, and pulled them both down to his knees. There was a slight spring to him as she pulled them past his cock, but that wasn't enough to satisfy her. She looked up at him, his eyes saying, "Yes, please." So she kissed her way up the inside of his thigh until she could feel the tip of his manhood softly touching the side of her cheek. She held him briefly as she felt him swell, and then took him in her mouth, gently swirling until he was at full attention. His hand went to the side of her face, caressing, tender, his fingers combing softly through her hair. She could feel the rumble of a moan as his abs trembled. Looking up, she saw that his eyes were now closed and his head tilted askew. She wondered if he was trying to imagine someone else, or if he was focusing his attention on his sense of touch. She kissed softly up his torso, like the line over his chest, nibbled up his neck, and then bit his earlobe. He gave an uncomfortable grunt. Maybe she had bit too hard. His chest heaved with an audible sigh, and then another low moan as she eased herself on top of him. Riding him slowly at first, one of his hands went to the side of her hip, the other that had been stroking her cheek going to the swell of her breast. There was suddenly such an urgency to her desire that she quickened her pace, and he, sensing her impatience, matched her stroke for stroke. The orgasm felt like an explosion. She cried out, "Yes, God, yes." And he followed her over the edge, both hands on her hips now. He began to slow his strokes, but there was still more need in her. She wanted to ride him until she could feel every last ounce of hardness he had. She quickened her pace again, pushing his arms up over his head, his eyes still closed. Not an explosion this time, but wave after delicious wave, until there was nothing left of him and she was out of breath. She leaned in and gave him a deep kiss before easing herself off his lap. "How about you give me that tour of the place and then we can break for lunch?" "Yeah," he said. "Let's do that." What was supposed to be a short overnight stay with a perfect stranger in a perfect place turned into a week-long love affair full of food, sex, and long walks through an enchanted vineyard. On the last day before the family was scheduled to arrive, she awoke early to find him packing the trunk of a small two-seater sports car. Aside from the stacks of unedited novels and a curious array of shoes, she was surprised to find that he traveled as light as she did. They had coffee and croissants on a terrace overlooking the hillside and said very little. Afterward, they took one final tour of the chateau, checking for any sign they had ever been there. He locked the front door with a single key and placed it under a floor mat. "Not very high tech," she said. "It's a place out of time," he said. "Won't last." She sat beside him as they drove through the hills, her hand on his leg, the top pulled down, and the wind in her hair. She watched the landscape roll by and lost track of time. The train was already at the station when they arrived, so whatever they needed to say to one another had to be brief. "Where to next?" she asked. "Paris, then New York. I'll be there for a while, at least through the holidays, and then... who knows? And you?" "My friends will be in Rome by now. One more week on the continent and then back home." "Which is?" She realized she had never told him where she was from. They had talked movies, music, politics, history, philosophy, lots of books, but they had never really talked about themselves. She was okay with that. "Who knows?" she replied. "Come with me," he said. "It's an incredible life I have. It would be a shame not to share it with you, at least for a little while longer." "I can't," she said. He moved to speak, but she put her finger against his lips and shook her head. She kissed him one last time and flitted away from him like a nymph disappearing into the forest. Standing at the station waiting to board the train, she thought she could still smell him, pipe tobacco and aged French oak. Only she wasn't standing at a train station. She was standing in a crowded Trader Joe's, a little old lady tapping on her shoulder, urging her forward to the cash register. She came to her senses, purchased her groceries, and paused before stepping out in the summer heat. And there he was, standing as if waiting for her by the door, a bottle of wine in his arm, the label, a hand-drawn sketch of the chateau from so many years before. The same French-cut shirt with the cuffs unbuttoned, the same faded pair of jeans, the same sparkling blue eyes. And, as if he had been standing there by the door waiting for ages for her to arrive, he opened his mouth. "Well, hello there," he said. Zoe was shocked. Shocked by the memory, shocked by the circumstance, shocked by his face. He had aged, of course, but his appearance seemed more chiseled than before, as if the lines of his face had just been carved a little deeper. She approached him, unsure of herself for a moment. "Hi," she said. He smiled warmly, as if relieved that she had recognized him. "How about I buy you a cup of coffee?" he said. "It's too hot out for coffee. How about you buy me an ice cream?" "Even better." There was a small creamery in the shopping center, which she pointed to. "Let me just put these in my car," he said. "You don't think the heat will ruin the wine?" she asked. He shook his head. "Come on." They walked together across the parking lot, and she recognized his car immediately. The two-seater sports car he'd been driving when they had met so many years ago. "It's not the same one," he said when he saw her smile. "But it feels like it is, drives like it is. Even the radio seems to be tuned to the same station." "So your tastes haven't changed," she said. "No, I guess they haven't." The ice cream shop was larger inside than Zoe expected. She couldn't remember if she had ever been in here before. Her and John didn't take the kids out for ice cream that often, and when they did, it was the place closer to home. It was also busy. Families arguing over sizes, children begging for toppings that didn't actually go together, a few teenage couples sharing root beer floats. Zoe spotted an empty table. She touched his arm flirtatiously and popped up on her tippy toes to whisper in his ear. "You go get me a double scoop of toffee crunch. I'll go get us some seats." He said nothing, but dipped his chin graciously as if this was all routine and headed for the line. She walked across the linoleum floor. Its surface in places was sticky, but she recognized how impossible it must be to keep the floor gleaming this late on a summer afternoon. It hit her in that moment that she had been way too casual with this man she hadn't seen in 20 years. Touching his arm, whispering in his ear, even following him to his car, these were not things soccer moms did with strangers. And he was a stranger, wasn't he? He was a stranger back then. Sure, she could remember every inch of his skin, every smell from every surface on his body. She could even remember the soft moan of his orgasms. But there was nothing she knew about this man that wasn't as translucent as a wisp of smoke in a fever dream. She ought to feel self-conscious, but she wasn't. She ought to feel a little guilty for indulging the fantasy of her youth, but she didn't. To her, this felt like finding an old handwritten love letter in a high school yearbook.
Of course she's going to find a quiet place to read it. Of course she's not going to show it to her husband. She sat down in the wire chair with stiff padding, her hand lightly brushing the surface of the formica table. It had been worn down from years of wet rags and toxic cleaning supplies, but it wasn't sticky. She was glad about that. She turned to watch the man standing in line. He was contemplating the menu, his squint revealing deep crevices at the sides of his eyes. Yes, he was older, but the shape of his body had barely changed. It still had that movie star quality, broad at the shoulder, thin around the middle. Triangular rather than pear-shaped, the way men get when they replace sports on the field with sports on television. She remembered being so attracted to that then, a prowling body rather than a loping one, the ripple of muscle untarnished by gravity. Zoe wasn't sure how she felt now. Attractive is attractive, no denying that, but she wondered if she'd be more excited to see him with a little more padding around the middle, a hairline that wasn't so distinct. A little less like he had just stepped off a yacht, and a little more as if he'd just stepped out of a minivan. She didn't have to look at his left hand to know there was nothing on his ring finger. Probably not even the faintest line. Lost in her own thoughts, she didn't notice him again until he was standing in front of her, two ice cream cones in his hands. "Toffee crunch, right?" he said. "Vanilla for you?" she asked. "Of all the flavors in the world, and you choose vanilla." Seemed simple and refreshing. He shrugged as he sat down opposite her, his smile genuine, his eyes curious. "So," she said, "how have you been?" They talked between licks of ice cream, she being careful not to make each taste reek of sexual innuendo, which is no small feat. He being casual and relaxed, a little flirty maybe, but charming, not aggressive. His life had been a closed loop since the day she left him at the train station. Writing novels, traveling the world, staying in other people's homes. If there had been a succession of dreamy weekends with sexually adventurous college girls, he didn't mention them. But she wouldn't have been surprised. He was still very charming and very attractive, and there was still that slight boyishness about him that made him feel human and safe. "Do you have any place to be for the next few hours?" he asked. She said that she didn't. "What do you think about going for a little drive? Get above all the heat and smoke. Maybe even see some stars as the sun goes down." It was hardly the kind of suggestion a happily married woman with two kids and an SUV should ever consider, but she hadn't felt naughty in a long time, and she couldn't remember the last time she had seen the stars. Why not indulge just the tip of this fantasy? Maybe even have a proper goodbye this time. "Sure," she said. "Why not?" They drove for 30 minutes up into the foothills above the city. He was right about the car. It felt exactly like the one from before. The soft purr of the engine, the light touch through the corners. She almost pulled the tie from her hair and let the wind have its way with her. But how would she explain that when she got home? The sunroof on her SUV didn't have quite the same effect. He pulled the car over on a long outcrop that had a stunning view of the city below. They weren't the only couple parked, but they were the only ones watching the sun go down. They sat quietly together as the street lights turned on and the orange horizon turned to purple and then to black. She wondered if he was waiting for her to seduce him again, the way she had 20 years ago. If he was reliving their brief time together, if there was a melancholic emptiness of what might have been had she stayed. "This is nice," he said. "Yeah. But I should probably take you home now." "Yeah." The drive back down into the valley seemed to take no time at all, and before she knew it, she was up and out of his tiny little roadster, looking down on him in the same way she had when she had a train to catch. "Would you like my number?" he asked. "I wouldn't know what to do with it, she said. Thank you, he said. For what? My life's work has been all about fake romance and impossible chance encounters. It's nice to remember that once upon a time it was all real. In that case, you're very welcome. Goodbye, Zoe. Goodbye. He put the car in gear and drove away. Zoe walked back to her own car, started the engine, and blasted the AC until her fingers became cold. When she got home, the porch light was on, but the rest of the house was dark except for the flicker of the television in the den. John, in a pair of boxers and a tank top, had fallen asleep on the couch. He looked quiet and peaceful, and she had half a mind to let him be, pour herself a glass of wine, grab a trashy novel, and read in bed until she too was fast asleep. However, she still felt a little naughty. She kneeled in front of him, grabbing the elastic of his shorts, and pulled gently down until they were around his ankles. She kissed her way up the inside of his thigh until she could feel the tip of his manhood softly touching the side of her cheek. She held him briefly as she felt him swell, and then took him in her mouth, gently swirling until he was at full attention. His hand went to the side of her face, caressing, tender, his fingers combing softly through her hair. She could feel the rumble of a moan as his abs trembled. She saw that his eyes were open and his head tilted askew, looking down upon her as if he had been waiting ages for her to arrive. Well, hello there, he said. This has been Checkout Line, written by Maggie Bowen and narrated by Joshua McRae. Copyright, Dirty Little Podcast, 2019. If you like this show, please rate us on iTunes or wherever you're listening from, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you've got a dirty little story of your own, please go to dirtylittlepodcast.com and hit the submissions page. And as always, have a wonderfully dirty little day.